Infinite Waters Radio. Diving deep, leaving no stone unturned. Elevating the soul, exploring the mind. Question everything. We are the future. Expect the unexpected. Rising higher. Swimming with the dolphins. We deserve more. 360 senses. Explosive. It's now or never. Open your mind.
Greetings once again, thank you for diving with us into Infinite Waters. I'm your host Ralph Smart, this is Infinite Waters Radio, and we have a very special guest today. Someone who I really feel is pushing the boundaries and really inspiring, has a great message out there. Sonia Barrett, and she's no stranger to Infinite Waters. She's been here a couple of times, but we're just fortunate to get her back. For those who don't know who Sonia Barrett is, because we have a lot of new listeners, so I hope everyone out there is well. Sonia Barrett is the author of The Holographic Canvas, The Fusing of Mind and Matter, published in September 2008. And she is also going to be bringing out her upcoming book soon, The Cosmic Game in 3D, and that's what the show is entitled, Mastering Reality, Mastering the Matrix of the Mind. She's also the host of Sovereign Mind Radio and publisher of Sovereign Mind Magazine. And she is currently producing a documentary titled The Marketing of Breast Cancer, The Pink Ribbon Agenda. And she's got a fabulous website. I go there a lot to read these great essays. And you can find her main website, spiritinform.com, www.spiritinform.com. All the information will be on my site, so you can go there. Sonia, it's wonderful to have you dive with us into Infinite Waters. It's been too long. We missed you.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I'm always honored to be on your show. I'm always honored to be invited to anybody's show. It's a privilege, I always say, not a right.
Yeah. Right.
So thank you. And thank you for everything that you've been doing. You've just been busy and just taking off and just really presenting really deep, profound insights. And so I'm grateful for that and proud of you for stepping out there and doing it.
Oh, thanks. Well, I feel that we're in a quickening.
Yep.
It's hard to keep up. It just seems like time is just accelerating. It seems actually the internet is just making us speed up even more.
Right.
The amount of information that's out there, it's very difficult to keep up.
Oh, it is.
You want to watch, but there's just not enough time. But I'm just, it's so wonderful to have you back. In your earlier appearances on Infinite Waters, we talked about The Holographic Canvas. I have that book on my bookshelf. It's such a great book, really opened my mind to a lot of just new ways of thinking. And now, you know, I'm really excited about not, you know, you've got two things going on. You know, you've got this great documentary on breast cancer, the marketing of breast cancer, the pink ribbon agenda, which I'm really interested in. I know that you put a lot of work into that, and also you're coming to do another book, The Cosmic Game in 3D. So it's almost like you're hitting us from both sides, Sonia.
I'm hitting myself from you know, both sides.
It's not just one project, you've got to do the two. So we can start, should we start with The Cosmic Game in 3D?
Because, well,
the title just sounds fantastic.
Well, you can. You know, and for anybody who is familiar, you know, with the fact that that book was a book in the making, I had anticipated finishing that book actually at the end of December, the first part of January. But a lot of things changed, and sometimes it's just the way it is. I had one idea in mind, which was I was simply really taking a lot of the articles, because there were so many profound articles on the website, and compiling them and sort of, you know, creating, putting them into a book form to some degree. And it's sort of like I did with the first book. I mean, that branched off into other things as well. But then as I was putting this together, suddenly it took a different turn, and then there was a tremendous amount of new information that came in that was very, very edgy, very cutting edge. And so I now had to focus my mind a little bit differently. It was going to take a lot more focus and sitting and writing this. I mean, there were, you know, science, levels of science involved. And so it wasn't simply just putting this together. And so that's basically kind of what happened. So my plan is to be able to truly get to it and, you know, completing it. I really want to before the end of the year, but it covers.
We're waiting. No pressure there.
Yeah, it covers quite a bit of different things. You know, the zodiacal structure and the cycles, because we're so, you know, many people are so involved in you know, astrology, and of course the whole system of the cycles and what they mean to us. And so I bring in a different, I shouldn't say a different edge, but an extension of, you know, from what we already know or what we've been told about our association with the astrological cycle. So I take it a step further beyond that. What happens after that now that we've seen the structure of that? Where does that take us? And, you know, going into some other things. And so, you know, that's just one of them. And then I talk about the 01 code and the 9 cycles. So I'm going into things about binary code, which I had no intention of doing. It just sort of came out of nowhere. So there's that aspect of it that's, you know, in this information and, you know, the whole destiny loop thing. And anyway, just lots of stuff. I'm excited, Ralph.
I'm excited as well.
What is
the cosmic game for those that may not I've heard this term before? What is the cosmic game exactly?
Well, the cosmic game is everything. It's basically, it's the entire spectrum of experiences that we are having. And, you know, we typically, most people don't recognize it as that, because you're so busy experiencing that you just don't stop to think about, well, you know, what is this experience exactly? And so when I stepped away a while back and started to examine it, I mean, it really came to me. I really saw it. I'm like, wait a minute, this is just a giant cosmic game. It's creation playing with itself. It's creation experimenting with itself. It's creation in its profound imagination system, just imagining and creating from that imagination. And we are the ones that make that happen. So, and we, yet we are creation itself. So we are the thing that we are looking for. And at the same time, we are the most limiting aspect of the experience. And at the same time, we are the most profound aspect of the experience. So what else could it be when you examine even just your own experience here on the planet and how we move through, these experiences on the planet? It's very game-like. I mean, there's more to it than that, but it's very game-like, and you're caught up in, you know, you're caught up in the fear and the, all of these things that are going on. So when somebody says it's a game, you're like, that's just ridiculous. This is serious. Well, that's all right. Part of the game. It has to be serious. It's like playing a video game. Your kids
right. are definitely.
It's the same definitely. Difference.
Well, I know that, you know, your goal, especially when you do your workshops, is really just to reawaken the memory.
Right.
And I find that fascinating because it seems that humanity has been put into a state of amnesia. We've really been dumbed down as a majority, so many of us. And it's, although the internet, as I see it, is great, but there's so much there that it's such a distraction as well. You know,
it oh, seems that's like the game. Yeah, that's you know, it.
That's the game to the next level, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, that's the game. That's the distraction. I mean, I like to describe it, use the analogy of going to a concert, you know, one of those concerts where you've got 10 different bands playing, or, you know, one of those events where you've got several bands and you have to decide which one are you going to go see. You want to see them all. You can't see them all. I mean, the game is like that. It's like, which game do I want to participate in now? Do I want to participate in the victim game? Okay, well, if I do the victim game, how many ways can I play it? You know what I mean? You know?
Right, right.
You know? Yeah. How can I ensure that I will get, squeeze all the juice out of being a victim? Or, you know, whatever it is, there's so many facets to it. And the best part for me is the fact that when we are playing these, what I call roles, when we are in these characters, because these characters are not who we are, they're simply that. These roles that we play, at the end of the day, that's basically all it boils down to. And we're so engaged in it, we're so engaged in being what we are, that you don't really see anything else. And then you take it seriously, which you have to. You have to take it seriously in order to really get the fullest experience out of it. That's the whole reason for being so, you know, dumbed down, is because we have to get in there, as you say, dive in. So dive
right.
in completely, as they say, you know, hook, line, and sinker. We're in it. And some of us are awakening of, on different levels. Because even when we say awaken, people say, oh, yeah, I'm awake. Well, I find that no matter how awake I think I am, there's another level of awake, being awake. I mean, it's just this endless level. You're awake to one major level of it, but there's so much that we just do not remember. And this is what is exciting about it. It's this endless memory. So we should never think that anything is final or we've got the final conclusion. We've got it completely figured out, because this game is expansive. And it's changing according to you and your own perception and where you choose to, you know, what your boundaries are.
Well, that's fascinating as well, because how I look at it is that, you know, you talk a lot about survival.
Yeah.
And it seems that here in the West, people survive. But if you go to other countries, it's a lot worse. There, people, you know, you literally have to fight for your bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
And there, when you're in that kind of survival mode, you don't have time to even begin to question your reality. You just have your only concern is just to survive.
Oh yeah.
How are you going to feed yourself? How are you going to have the right accommodation? So I always say a lot of people living in the West are kind of lucky in a way that they do have the opportunity to take time out of the survival mode if they choose. Because in a lot of other systems, in a lot of other systems, it's very difficult. It's even more difficult because of how the system is put together, that it makes sure that people don't actually have it puts so much pressure on them.
And then there's so many levels to the word survival too. That's the other thing. You know, there's the obvious survival, and then there is this, there's other levels. Even the wealthiest person plays the survival game. This is what's so fascinating, because survival shows up in many different ways. And the most obvious are, of course, what you mentioned, those circumstances. Then we have to take it a step further, and we have compassion for these people, but we have to take it a step further in how, you know, why those people live in certain environments that they do, and maybe you and I don't live in those certain environments. I mean, so then the story gets even bigger in terms of the individual's story and the individual's journey and the individual's bloodline and the individual. I mean, it comes down to this bigger picture that we seldom look at, because if we looked at it in the deepest, most profound way, it would take away from those of us who do need to feel, I don't want to say guilt, to feel like we need to go out and save somebody. But there's a lot of things, there's a lot of factors involved, is what I'm saying. It's like everything right. is happening so that everybody can have a particular experience. If there was no war, then we wouldn't have the people who really need to go out and try to create peace, then they wouldn't be able to there, you know what I mean? And if the right, the poor people weren't there, then the rich people couldn't experience being rich, and vice versa. So right. it's like we have to look at the dynamics of this. We have to look at what is the payoff that's going on for everyone that we do not look at, because everybody is so busy in their own game and their own survival program, whatever that may be, that you're consumed with your game. So you don't really want to look at all that, because when you do, what happens is you end up stepping back. And then your game can change. Then you change it, because you end up stepping back and you end up really going, wait a second here. Wait a second.
You're right.
You know, it could change everything. Did you ever see The Cube? That movie called The Cube, Ralph?
No, I didn't.
You should see it. You should see it. It's really an interesting movie. Bunch of people trapped in this cube from different most of them were professionals, but I think from different aspects of life, you know, you have a mathematician, I think you have a scientist, you have a teacher, you know, so on and so forth. And they all had to try to figure out how to get out of this cube. And, you know, people were dying, but they had to try to figure it out. And all of the evaluation that was involved in everybody using mathematical whatever to figure it out and all this stuff. And in the end, you'd be surprised who actually made it out of there and the reason why they made it out of
right.
there. Well, this reminds
right.
me of this same situation that we're in. So we have to recognize the distractions that you just mentioned, which is everything going on around us distracts us. No matter how we think we're so spiritual and so aware, it distracts us because we're too busy now feeling sorry for the people, praying for peace, how are we going to fix it? And so we can't get to see, you know, who the wizard. We can't get to see what's
right.
behind the curtain.
I had Thomas Sheridan on the show a while back, and he wrote a book called The Labyrinth of the Psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
We were discussing a great book, actually. And, you know, we were just discussing psychopaths, and he was saying that, you know, nature doesn't make mistakes.
Right.
And she created these psychopaths basically to help humanity evolve, and they're not going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these psychopathic people that so-called run the world, they're there for a reason. They're actually doing their job.
They are doing their job. She's right.
Without them, we cannot actually be pushed to the next level, because they help.
Right.
They help push us. You know, they help. You know,
you're forced
push the adrenaline through our body to actually otherwise we wouldn't do anything.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's very interesting because we always look at things as evil. Oh, you know, let's get rid of all of these crazy people. But at the same time, we might actually need them. They're there for a reason.
And that's all part of the game, too. Even when we say, well, let's get rid of these crazy people, well, then now we're figuring out how to do that. Now we have a whole dialogue around it. But if they weren't there, then that wouldn't even happen. And what would we do? So everybody waiting for the land of peace and milk and honey. And I always say, okay, and then what? So who wants to sit around in heaven all day just drinking milk and eating honey? And then what? That sounds so boring. I mean, so you could sit around doing nothing all day.
Right.
That's what we don't realize when we're asking for peace. People really aren't clear on what they're asking for. There is a personal harmony, and there is a harmony, but we need to redefine even what does peace really mean. We don't know because it's something for us to do. It's like chanting. Looking for peace, talking about peace, wanting peace is just something that we do. It's part of the game. We don't even know what that means. Or we think about what would life be like if we have that total, what we call peace and love and harmony all day long in this environment. But how would that be? How boring would that be? I'm not saying that we shouldn't have that. I'm just saying people need to really think about what life would be like without diversity.
Right. Well, there are many creatures on this planet, right? There are many creatures under the ocean that they're just discovering, like 25,000 miles, you know, below the ocean bed, and they're surviving without the process of photosynthesis. So it's just interesting to know that there are so many different life forms, and you know, the crocodile and the bear, they're all, you know, it's all the same thing, but it's just totally different. Very, very interesting that we are living. We sometimes I feel as human beings, we think that we are it. You know, you know, we are the ones, and that's it. You know, everything revolves around us, and you know, we are so high and mighty. And
we're the most superior.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once I think people have the paradigm shift, then you realize that it's so much deeper than that. It's so much more deep. You know, nature isn't really concerned about you in particular. You know,
exactly.
It's not going to lay out the red carpet for you.
So much bigger. So much bigger. You know, and you know, Ralph, I was saying that, remember who I was talking to, and I was saying, you know, when I mean, I've talked to a couple of people, one individual in particular, with what he does, and he kept saying he was the only person on the planet that knew how to do this. Nobody else knew how to do it. And, you know, and people, and I say people that have that mindset that they are the only ones that have discovered a certain level of information, no one else on the planet. And I'm always thinking, well, do you know everyone on the planet? Do you know? I mean, there's so many right. pockets of realities on this one place we call planet Earth that we have no idea. And to me, it would be pretty, it would put me out in the cold, because I'm like, well, where does this leave me if I'm the only one, if I'm the one with the answers, and I am feeling that nobody else has exceeded what I have achieved, then where does that leave me? That doesn't really leave me with much confidence and much room. I'd like to think that there are people who are way more expansive than you and I have awakened to at this time. I have to think that, because if I don't, then where does that leave us? If we limit ourselves, we don't know everybody on the planet. We don't even know what that means. Everybody on the planet. We only see slices of it. We only see, you know, as I've often said, we only see our slice of the world, which is what we're in direct contact with, and the rest of it are pictures and videos and images. We have no clue other than what we're told and what we have an immediate interaction with. And I think that's something that's very important for us to really recognize.
Well, it's funny you said that, because a world where there were no electronics, there was no internet, there's no telephone, it's going to be a totally different world. You know, and I feel that, you know, we take things for granted, like there's 7 billion people on the planet, but really you don't have any way of testing or proving that.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to meet each one. You know?
Exactly.
And, that's part of the program in my mind, because we just accept these things. I was actually listening to a good video, and, you know, they were just saying, how do you know the Earth is round? And, you know, I'm a very open-minded person, but it just made me think. I was like, damn, you know.
We don't know anything other than what we're told most of the time.
It's a total trip, because we just accept all of these things. And because we don't question, because everyone is afraid to question. Otherwise, you know, you'd be ostracized. So it's a lot easier just to go along. Okay, the Earth is round. They've tested it. But how do you know? Unless, you know, how would you know that?
We can see it from space.
Right.
I mean, I'm just saying, that's what people, I mean, people come up with all kinds of reasons. Like the guy I asked, you know, I said, you know, how do you know you're not dead right now? He got so upset because right. You know, he said, well, I know I'm not. I mean, I can, you know, touch this desk. And then it's like, what does that mean? I think it's just really kind of jarring your own way of thinking. It's just the shock factor for your own self, just to get you to realize how much you really don't necessarily have a clue on, you know, that anything is possible. And that's the part that always cracks me up, because we always say that. We always say everything is possible, and, you know, and then we limit the possibilities. And it's, if anything is possible, that means everything is, you know, everything is right. A possibility. Everything is a potential. You know, is there an Earth? Is there a universe? I mean, what does that really mean? I mean, we could get real crazy on it, but...
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, in this society are cognitive misers, where they don't really want to think. And I think that helps a lot of people in terms of the Matrix. Just to be cognitive misers, because that way you can, you know, you go to work, you don't have to think, you know, you switch off or you plug into your iPod and that's it, your iPad and what have you, and that's it, really. You know, you don't expend too much brain energy.
You don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that. You could, you have to, you need that for later when you watch TV.
right. And you also talk about the programming of our money, and you know, a lot of us, obviously we're living in a world which is you know, money driven, you know, most of us, and you know, money changes how we, you know, the perception of we have of money often changes our relationship to it. You know, when I was reading some of the articles, very interesting what you were actually saying about money. You know, please touch on that in terms of because a lot of people say, well, you need money.
Yeah, money makes the world go around.
You know, money is actually a great thing, because otherwise, how else would you barter? I mean, are you going to sell someone some cows in this day and age?
Well, no. I don't know. But right about now, that would be a bad idea.
Right. I mean, a lot of people I talk to, they're like, money is the best thing because it's so convenient. We wouldn't be able to barter any other way.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of, well, I don't see it. It's not a good or a bad thing. I see it as more of a psychological experience.
Right.
And a catalyst. And I know I did a teleconference, I think I did on this, and this was money and the scarcity and plenty game, how the brain responds to the illusion of money. And I think I may have done an article as well. And basically it just kind of went into the studies that they've had in terms of the brain's response to money. And you don't even have to look at those studies. You could just examine it your own self as to how we respond, just even in the increments, in mentioning a dollar amount, there is such an interesting response. For example, I was talking to a friend the other day, And this was in reference to the film and all of that. And I remember somebody, the person I was talking to before that, we were talking about the funding, and he mentioned, $1 million or $2 million. And immediately, no matter, despite everything that I know, I could feel a completely different energy with myself when he said $1 million or $2 million, because it has been so outside the scope of my reality. You know what I mean? It's not something you are familiar with. And so you can feel the psychological impact, the emotional impact that it's having on you, just to mention even the dollar amount. And so that's all becomes part of a programming, and that's a whole other thing, because I go into the ancestral program and, why you're in a situation that you're in, why we're in a situation we're in where maybe we're not millionaires. We don't have a certain kind of money, and you look at your immediate family background and you see, and like, has anybody in your family ever had that kind of money? No. So there is this program literally that runs through the genetic stream, your ancestral stream. There is this program. It's not just verbal program, but it's in there. So there's a whole other science that I ended up seeing around that. I also recognize that money really shows itself in our lives according to the experiences that we need to have. I think that is a very, very important part of this that people really need to look at. Money shows up according to what we still need to experience. And if indeed your journey involves conditions that would not happen if you were filthy rich, then it would just definitely not be there. And I think that's something that we definitely have to look at. We don't typically hear it talked about. And so we just don't think about it. We just complain that it's not there. But if you examine your situation right now and look at the patterns, look at the story that's been played over and over again in your life, throughout your life, and your involvement, your financial involvement, you will see that there is a pattern and that there's a story that's always associated with it. And that's why when you get many people who win the lottery and the money, they lose it. They never hang on to it. And the reason for that is because they're coding. They're not coded for that. They're just not coded for it. And because of that, they have stories in their journey that still need to be played out. And having that money takes away from the completion of those stories that they're not done with, that journey that they're not done with. So it's there for a short while, and then it goes away. We are coded for I see that. There's definitely a coding. I think that in that lecture, actually, I had done a lecture on that called Reality Code Expansion, choice versus programs. And it kind of went into that, even the, upper class, middle class, lower class, even those programs we've got going. And so we tend to look at the people in the other class, that have money very different. When you're in a lower class from that, we have is a completely different, psychological experience that we have going. It's almost like they're alien to us, and we become alien to them, because they're coding, especially old money. People who are old money, you've got like, these families like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and these families that have had money there for a long time. There's a coding there for that. And they just, anyway, that's a whole other story, too, as to how they keep coming back into the same bloodline anyway.
Well, you cover so many topics, and I recommend everyone to go to spiritinform.com. And, you've got so much that would really open your mind. I'm of the school that not everyone came to Earth to learn the same lesson, and not everyone is supposed to be tuned into the same information for a reason.
Absolutely.
A lot of people in this so-called conscious community, they want the whole world to be saying what they're saying, but you know, that's the same thing all over again. You know, it's making everyone conform to your own
idea.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably how the world got into the position it's in at the moment, because you know, once you have a certain idea, then you want everyone else to, you know, to go along with it.
Well, it validates it.
It validates it. Yeah, mm-hmm. The more people that sing with you, then the louder the cry is.
Right, and you believe you're more apt to believe what you've been, you know, what you want to believe, because you have more people to validate it. And that, right. I've been saying that for the longest while, when they keep saying, you know, the whole world, you know, just a world of peace and love, or trying to get everybody into that one idea, because everybody's peace is different. Everybody's idea of love is different. You know, we have to look at that. We all don't see it that way. The guy who gets out right. there and, you know, says that he took out 5 people and he's doing it in the name of peace. Okay. I mean,
right.
However we want to evaluate him as nuts or not, the point is there are people who are doing things because their own idea of what peace and love is completely different than our own. And so I think what we need to look at more so is our engagement with external reality, you know, what our perceptions and our belief systems is what's determining how we engage in what we call the rest of the world, in the experiences that we do have. It's our beliefs and our perceptions that are determining that. And I think so that's really more the focus. It's not really what's going on per se over here. But what is my interpretation of that? What is my emotional interaction with that? What is my physical interaction with that? Why is it that I don't live in that part of the world? Would I get up and move to that part of the world, this war-torn part of the world? I mean, so we have to look at, well, what's my story then? If I have not been confined to that, if I didn't have to experience that, then what is my story then? And start looking right. at that. There are people that right. went to that didn't live in New York, but they probably traveled all the way from wherever they lived to meet their fate in the towers. I mean, as much as you don't want to think of it that way, but you look at, why would somebody come all the way from Germany or France or whatever the case may be, no other time but that time, and here they are right there at that moment. And then you have somebody else who said, my maid was late that day, or I'm never late, or this happened. And we hear it all the time with flights, you know, people not catching a flight that went down and they just had a feeling, or the most out of the world thing happened, something that's very unusual would happen, and then that wasn't their fate. You know, or you get an right. accident, a car accident or a plane crash, and you get one person that survives. We have to examine those things. Parachute don't open. Most people, you know, die. Then you have some people right. that get just barely a scratch. You know,
it's very, very, very mysterious, as
what's
I
your
say.
Journey? You know, the you bottom know, line is, some... what's your journey? What is your journey
right.
about then? You know?
Right.
So
well, it is really extraordinary just to realize the scope of this, because these things, a lot of us, we don't really ponder, because maybe it's not even in our comprehension.
No, it's not. Plus, feel sorry for yourself. It's just easier to do the other story.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we can, suddenly move on to the business of disease, which I know that I saw the trailer, it looks fantastic. And this is really interesting for me, because I feel that you're touching on a subject which is really important to not only women, but just to all of us in general. And this is the marketing of breast cancer.
Well,
you know, this is...
It's actually changed a little. Well, I'll wait till you're finished and then I'll get in.
Okay. Well, The Business of Disease, the documentary that you're doing, you know, touch on that really in terms of what is it about and what are you trying to cover with that?
Well, it's, you know, it started out being, you know, based on the breast cancer, but then it went and it took off into many other directions and just general and just the overall disease, business of disease. But I wrote an article called The Marketing of Breast Cancer, The Pink Ribbon Agenda, just based on my being a little bit tired of the pink ribbon campaign and every time, you know, being asked, do you want to contribute to this, you know, running for a cure. And I just really saw that, geez, I mean, this seemed like it was more, it's creating more of a problem, that the breast cancer rate would rise simply from the over-marketing and the fear that was invested in it. And after I wrote the article, I was just surprised as to how many people responded. I mean, even people who had breast cancer before responded in favor of the article, and talked about what they didn't understand before and, you know, their own situation. And I looked at the fact that there were women removing healthy breasts just out of fear of getting this because maybe somebody, their mother or somebody in the family had it. And so that made me look at more of, geez, you know, well, what is our society doing? What's really going on? So I started to look at the marketing and, you know, aspect of it, which I have, Dr. Clotia Rapai, who wrote The Culture Code, who is amazing, man hired by many huge, you know, we're talking Fortune 500 companies and, you know, including the, your car companies, and he helped create the PT Cruiser, and I think Hyatt Regency in terms of their, you know, how they've created their bathrooms and so on and so forth. Well, what I began to look at and understand more about is how, you know, marketing was actually done. And most of the marketing is not really based on people's likes, but based on certain coding in a group of people, in, you know, it could be in a culture, generally in a culture, is basically how it's done. And then they find certain different codes and then they create from those codes. They design vehicles and whatever, buildings, even the bathroom at the Hyatt Regency based on the toilet paper, you know, code, the code of independence, which they looked for, which was toilet paper, because, you know, that's the first sign of independence to, you're imprinted with when you learn how to wipe your butt. So, so the bathrooms are designed a certain way. So when you walk into certain buildings and you feel a certain way, you don't know why you feel that certain way. There's a coding, you know, in a lot of this that speaks to the psyche or speaks to that part of you that you're not very aware of. So I'm not saying good thing or bad thing. What I am saying in the film is bringing an awareness to how, you know, are you asking questions? You know, what is your design? You know, what are we beyond flesh and blood? So this is a film that's taking you from, which hasn't been put together in that manner in terms of health, taking you from the beer aspect of marketing that anybody can understand and watch this film from the aspect of marketing right through to how the brain and the mind works, how those components work, and even a little bit of quantum physics in there with Dr. Gwazami and Dr. Bruce Lipton. It's just so many great people in the film, but really taking you into an understanding of how you function. Does the body have an ability to heal? I mean, are you operating based on just hypnosis of marketing? Can the body heal itself? You know, where does belief system play a role? So, you know, so on and so forth. And the dependency on the medical doctors, not squashing them either, because everything has its place. But people have given over their power completely to what the doctor says, and we forgot about natural remedies, or the natural remedy is really more so coming from the inside. It's really something triggered each illness, each situation. What's the frequency behind that? What's the energy pattern behind it? That's really the core of all illnesses that we're experiencing. And so what we see as cancer or anything else really is really just the byproduct. It's more topical, to show that there is something going on and not just try to fix the symptom. Rather, it's just a symptom.
Like you say, a society programmed for sickness and death. And, one thing I find interesting is that the birthday program, in my mind, in my limited perception, it's almost like a timer for your way out. You know, someone came along, oh, let's give someone a birthday. And we're counting our way out of here. So we actually program ourselves almost like a timer.
What's the end of cycle?
At this age, then I'm going to be out of here. Because in a lot of, you do... some cultures actually never had birthdays as we have them today. They didn't even count, say, okay, you're 30 years old, or you're 60 years old. And, in this society, it's almost like as soon as a child is born, it's so programmed, it's so innate in ourselves now that, we almost have the time. we're proud of that, And, that way it's almost like, okay, someone can't live over 120. It's just not possible because we've accepted that as a collective agreement. It becomes a reality.
Right, absolutely. And I think that there is a way to do everything. I really do. I think that there's a double edge to everything. And I think that when we understand that certain things can be honored, and you can look at what you would call your age as more of, you can celebrate it as a return to this particular point in time in this vehicle. So it all comes down to perception, but the perception in this reality makes it a countdown. It changes it. It turns it into a countdown. You can still honor and celebrate that experience of the fact that you have this grand opportunity to realign differently, or to become more than you had maybe in another time in this experience that we call the physical. So I think it's just how we see it, and it changes the idea, yes, of immortality, because to just live. Obviously you're not ever going to know if you're immortal. If you're just living, you're just going to be living you transform. If somebody dies, then we know they're not immortal. It's kind of weird.
Right.
But it's, it's just the ability.
Well, I think a lot of
live.
Us, a lot of us, our health is put into jeopardy just by our lifestyles. You just have to walk around. And most of us, we're killing ourselves. We're killing ourselves. Just our lifestyles have become hazardous. We don't live sustainable lives. So sustainable living is not, in our reality, in the majority of our lives. And it just seems that, our lifestyles are very primitive. As a society, we have really... We're not helping ourselves because, we have so much at our disposal. And, it's really very interesting how it's all based on fear, as I see it. And,
right.
You talk of the marketing, and I think that we're living in the digital age.
Mm-hmm.
So, now we have the digital avatar, which is, our digital self on social networks like Facebook, that's our persona. But essentially, it's just you go on the internet and you're bombarded by so many advertisements. And I'm like, why is this happening? And
information.
There's definitely a science behind it that is somehow going into our minds, because it's really powerful. It works. In terms of how. A lot of, that's what the inception is.
Right.
A lot of us we think, oh, it's just, you know, you just see an advert on a bus go by and you're like, oh, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So, well, the brain picks up everything anyway. I mean, it just automatically, that's what it does. It picks up everything that you see and everything that you don't see. It is this major recording system central, you know, the center. It's everything. So it does that even if you're not looking at something. It's scanning the room. It's scanning everywhere that you are. And then we have to remember it's in touch with all potential realities as well. Because it's not the eyes that see anyway. We don't see with our eyes. It's the brain that picks up the frequencies. So we already are picking up everything. I think that what happens, though, is when we are living in such a space of being unaware and we're living in a limited perceptual space and our belief systems are limiting, then I think that there are certain conditions that make us more susceptible to the impact of certain external, what we would define as external influences. So it always comes back to the individual. It always comes back to the individual. How expansive is your perception? What are your boundaries? What are your belief systems? And a lot of people have very limiting belief systems. And the frequencies from whatever it is, could be the ads or whatever the case may be, are then able to really maybe stick a little bit more because it's found a common bond, a common frequency. You see what I mean? Everything comes down to a level of science, no matter which way we go. This whole thing comes down to science, you know?
Right.
It comes down to that. So we have to look at that and then also we have to understand more about this good and bad and what's good and bad and light and dark. And we have to understand all of that a little bit more too, because then we end up locking ourselves into a particular corner out of fear. So it's this catch 22. It's this real interesting game. The dynamics are very interesting as to observing and the judgment made on our observation, because then that puts you into a whole other stream of experiences just by our judgment of something. You know, I'm not saying don't judge anything. I'm just saying this is what happens because that's how we operate. Everything is data streams. So everything is being processed as information. It doesn't matter what it is. The glass has its own data code to it. Everything is supported and constructed based on a coding for that specific thing. So it doesn't really matter what it is. We have to remember that everything has some sort of data. It's a data stream that you're interacting with. And so, you know, where are you in your own perception, your own understanding, your own limitations? There's a freedom that, you know, we have to be able to enter into. And I think it really starts to help us. It really starts to take us beyond the fear of being caught or trapped or whatever it is, victimized by certain things. And that's kind of really some of what the film is showing in terms of health, you know. It's like you have to sort of observe the show. Observing, you know, is completely different. You have to be able to observe it and love it. That's what I always say. That's the other part that we don't hear about, but it is part of the, I'm going to use the word trick, but part of the trick or the magic to moving through these experiences in this reality is to be able to come into that space. I'm not saying you're there all the time, because there are days when I'm just want to just tear it down. I want to burn it down.
Yeah.
You know,
I understand.
but there is a love that we have to develop for the game. It's that moment, that aha moment where we step away and I'm talking where you really get this and you can laugh. And when, you know, I have people that we sit and we can crack up about this because it's so funny, stuff that we couldn't even talk to other people about because they would just probably, you know, stone us. But when right. you step away and you realize the humor of it, and you're not laughing at anyone, what you're doing is you're laughing at how maybe the individual really believes that they're the character that they are, and how you have believed the character that you are, and your own experiences, how we get into it, and we're crying, and we're, you know, all the stuff that we get into. And there's that moment where you can step away and go, oh my God, this is hysterical, because here I am, this magnificent, unlimited being, and I've actually come into this body and convinced myself that this is what I am and all that I am. Now I'm trying to figure out how to get back to, you know, this profound being that I am. And so I think it's necessary for us to be able to do that.
Well, that comes with definition, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we are constantly, a lot of us, there's a term called status anxiety, and a lot of us suffer from that.
Oh, absolutely.
It's all about definition, title,
it
prestige.
Is.
And as children, we're, like you said, we are basically limitless. We're unlimited. And, you know, therefore, essentially, we can really, we don't have any boundaries because we don't really define ourselves until, you know, it becomes convenient later on in life to have a status.
Exactly. You know? Right. That's And that's to engage in the game. So we even have to look at that, too. You know, it's like we do what we do to engage in the game because that's why you're here. So there's beating up the game, and then there's the appreciation for the game. Remember I said two sides to the coin. It's being able to be in this world and not of this world. I mean, you know, and so you're dealing with the two situations, being part of it. And when you're part of it, there's a level of awareness and consciousness about that. When you're not part of it, in that sense, you're able to create or change the dynamics of the game for when you re-enter into it. I'm talking stepping away for seconds. I mean, not seconds. It's, you can't even measure it because we're appearing and disappearing in what we call this reality construct anyway. It's not static. Right. We're never here consistently like we think. We're always appearing and disappearing. And then we have those moments of really, you know, being able to connect when we sit and meditate or do what we do and go into a different space that's outside of the defined physical experience, recognize those moments and be able to create something else. And, you know, bring that change back in onto the stage when we come back onto the stage. Breaking Character is another article that I had done as well on the website. Leaving the stage.
All your articles, I always say to you that they can be compiled into another book because you're really in detail with your articles, you know. And I'm like, they're so well written that they just need to be turned into a book.
Well, see, that's what I thought, too. That's what I was doing. And then that changed.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know, I mean, it's amazing for you to dive into Infinite Waters once again. We're running down on the time. I just want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I'm sure the Infinite Waters family have enjoyed the show. Just tell us about any upcoming events you have and plug your website, and I know you've got a conference. Is it the Pythagoras conference in November or something?
The Pythagoras conference in the December. It's in Kentucky, and that information is on my website, spiritinform.com, or the Pythagoras conference. And then I'm also speaking at this expo at the end of the week here. If you're in Los Angeles, well, it's in Long Beach. It's in, well, if you're in the LA area, and that's called the Alchemy Conference. And so I'll be speaking there this weekend, I think actually the 18th. And then I'm on the panel, the Ascension panel for Conscious Life Expo. That's also here. I believe it's in October in Los Angeles. And did I forget anything? I don't know. If I forgot anything, it's on my website, spiritinform.com.
Right. Well, I, whenever I hear you talk, it just really helps me awaken, you know, distant memory. It's fantastic, because when I first heard your term, the cosmic game, it reminded me of the film Wag the Dog.
Oh, and, yes.
You know, that's such a great film, because it just shows you what could be happening, you know, on the world scene, in terms of, you know, we think everything is like the way it is, but we don't even know if it's just a kind of...
all made up.
All made up, you know, in terms of script writers and all of these things. It definitely... and the sad thing is that, you know, the guy at the end just dies, you know, you know, and he, you know, because he was really real, you know, he wanted credit for his work.
I saw it years ago.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the cosmic game for me. It's really just about realizing how much, you know, seeing that we take life so seriously, when in essence it is a chess game. You know,
it's
the big chess game.
It's a huge
and
chess.
a lot of the times, you know, like you always say, we don't even question why we like games so much. You know, we love games in the game. You know, we love the, you know, whether you're watching basketball or you're watching football, anything. You know,
we love it.
We love games, so it wouldn't be, you know, hard to think that we're actually in one.
Well, the challenge, too. We enjoy the challenge in the game, you know. We enjoy the challenge of the game and all of that. So it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's the only way we could have designed games. We couldn't design it if you weren't in one.
It's so true. It's so true. It's just amazing to connect with like minds, because I feel that we're living in the greatest times. Right now, and the information is just amazing, how people are connecting from, you know, I think we're just connecting with a greater part of ourselves, and we just, the internet in my mind is like a mirror. It's just mirroring back, and just like a Stargate, you know, people are just going in and finding, you know, other parts of themselves. And that's why I don't necessarily think with the internet you're necessarily going to find anything. It's just there as a mirror, almost, you know. You're only going to find what you're tuned into.
Certain
people go on the internet and they search things that you would never search, so you don't even know it exists.
Right, absolutely. I mean, it's like any and everything. Honestly, God, you can, it doesn't matter what you plug in, there is something somewhere there. I mean, and it's the same thing. It's the same as this massive experience we're in. The internet just is just a simulation or a copy of this bigger networking system that we're all tied into.
Right. Well,
cosmic network.
Definitely. Well, Sonia, it's been an honor, and thanks so much once again. You know, it's always a treat just to have you dive into infinite waters. I hope the conference goes well.
Thank you.
And I'm sure it will, you know, because you definitely have a great way of, I've seen your other conferences, and it's very great to watch, you know. So once again, to everyone listening out there, thank you. And Sonia, thank you once again.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. And I look forward to you being on mine, because you'll be on my show as well. So.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I can't wait. And to everyone out there, continue to dive into infinite waters. And don't forget to question everything.
Infinite Waters Radio.